Ukraine calls NATO weak for rejecting a no-fly zone to confront Russia and pushes for more U.S. support. Iran and the IAEA release a joint statement agreeing on a roadmap to resolve all outstanding issues by late June. A deadly confrontation in the occupied Al-Quds. A Palestinian teen is killed and an Israeli soldier wounded in an attack. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Shafiq. Good to have you with us. Now, top story this hour, Ukrainian president is asking for more extensive support from the United States in the conflict with Russia. Volodymyr Zelensky says that in his phone conversation with U.S. President Joe Biden, he requested more financial aid and the continuation of sanctions on Russia. According to the White House, Biden has said that he's working to raise the costs on Russia. Ukraine's foreign minister has also asked his U.S. counterpart for supplies of fighter jets and air defense systems. Dmytro Kuleba is critical of NATO for refusing to impose a no-fly zone, calling it a sign of weakness. Western governments continue to flood Ukraine with arms and funds, with Washington so far promising $10 billion in aid and $350 million in weapons sales. So let's get some insight on this from Indra. Let's bring in John Stippling, author and commentator. Good to have you with us, John. So when push comes to shove, this is what NATO is doing. What's the reason behind this?
Well, I mean, the U.S. never really saw Ukraine as of strategic geopolitical importance. I mean, they're not going to go fight for Ukraine. This was part of foreign policy going back to the Reagan years, really. When World War II ended, NATO was kept in place. The Soviets actually at that time wanted NATO kept in place, but everyone agreed that NATO would be kept small and it would help pacify German reunification and all of this stuff. Nobody ever intended for NATO to expand, and certainly since the fall of the Soviet Union, in theory, there's no justification whatsoever for NATO to even exist. But starting in 1999, it did expand eastward. 2004, more countries. The U.S. tested that with Georgia and Ukraine with the Bucharest Declaration. Russia rejected it. Putin gave a speech in 2015 at the UN. Now, it's interesting. This speech is all but scrubbed from the internet. It's very hard to find. YouTube censored it. But Putin went to the UN and said, look, we fear NATO military bases on our border. This is an avowed enemy. They have said they want regime change in Russia, et cetera, et cetera. This is our sphere of influence. The U.S. and their Monroe Doctrine has their sphere of influence. Even George Kennan, you know, gave an interview and said, this is a very bad idea. You're going to antagonize Russia. And by extension, you're going to antagonize China. And you have to remember, this is a really key thing here. $1 billion have been fed through the National Endowment for Democracy against dissenting groups in China and Tibet and so forth, in Hong Kong. They've done it in Russia, surrounding Russia. There are military bases in the South China Sea surrounding China, bases in Europe surrounding Russia. Both China and Russia feel they are in the crosshairs of Western imperialism at this point. The U.S. tries to explain this as we are spreading democracy and, you know, people want to be free and so forth. That's not what they're doing, of course. So this is the background to this. Putin is not an expansionist. He doesn't want a greater Russia, these ridiculous ideas. He's not Hitler. He's done nothing except defend his border. And this is something that the U.S. did in the Cuban Missile Crisis. They said to the Soviet Union, you can't have missiles in Cuba, 60 miles from the shores of Florida. Right. This is what's being said today by Russia. You can't have a military base in Crimea. You can't have it in Western Ukraine. And in that speech in 2015, Putin pointed out that Donbass, where all the ethnic Russians are in Ukraine, has been shelled. Thousands of civilians have died. This is part of what the Russian argument has been in all of this, is that you have a neo-Nazi party put in power by the U.S., Zelensky handpicked by Victoria Nuland because he's very telegenic and Western appearing and so forth. But the Azov Battalion, the Svoboda Party, all these Banderite fascists in Western Ukraine are the people that are getting tens of millions of dollars, billions of dollars from the United States. That should give one pause, I think.
Okay, thanks for that. John Stepling, author and commentator in Endre, Norway. Now, Russia says it's disabled a military airbase in western Ukraine with long-range, high-precision weapons. The defense ministry says this is part of the strikes meant to destroy Ukraine's military infrastructure. The ministry says its forces have also disabled the Ukrainian-controlled S-300 missile system and hit 10 aircraft and choppers. Meantime, the evacuation of some 400,000 civilians is to resume in the southeastern city of Mariupol under temporary ceasefire that will last until 9 p.m. local time. An earlier ceasefire was broken on Saturday, with each side blaming the other for the situation. It's the 11th day of the military campaign, and Russia is inching closer to the capital, Kiev, with President Putin warning against any attempt to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
Any country that seeks to impose a no-fly zone will be considered by us to have entered the conflict. Imposing a no-fly zone will have colossal and catastrophic consequences, not only for Europe, but also the whole world.
Now, Putin says Western sanctions are akin to a declaration of war. He reiterated that his country aims to defend the Russian-speaking communities in Ukraine by demilitarizing and denazifying the country. Meantime, Ukrainian lead negotiators says the talks between the two sides to seek a way to end the conflict will resume on Monday. The last round of peace talks between the two sides failed to yield any results. According to the United Nations, the conflict that began on February 24th has claimed 350 civilian lives and injured 700 more people in Ukraine. The UN Refugee Agency has reported departure of 1.3 million refugees from Ukraine so far. France and the UK are engaged in a new bitter dispute over how to deal with the influx of refugees fleeing the conflict in Ukraine. Paris is complaining that British officials are treating refugees at the French port of Calais in an unsuitable and inhumane manner. French Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin says that 400 Ukrainians fleeing war have come to the port of Calais in hopes of joining their relatives already residing in Britain. But the UK has turned them away, telling them they need to go to Paris or Brussels to get visas. And according to Darmanin, the UK must provide consular services on the spot in Calais, just like it's doing on Ukraine's border in Poland. France and the UK have been at odds over post-Brexit fishing rights, and things took a turn for the worse following the drowning of 27 migrants in the English Channel in November last year, with each side accusing the other of inadequate response. A rally against the Russia-Ukraine war has been held in Rome, tens of thousands of people calling for an end to the conflict that could lead to the displacement and suffering of people on a massive scale.
On Saturday, over 30,000 people staged a rally in the Italian capital against the escalating war between Russia and Ukraine. The initiative was called by trade unions, leftist groups and pro-peace movements as fighting rages on in a number of Ukrainian cities and talks between Kyiv and Moscow have produced very little so far. The protesters chanted slogans for peace and the end of all wars, urging the United Nations to do more to mediate between Russia, Ukraine and all parties related to the ongoing Ukrainian crisis.
Rather than investing in social welfare, labor, health and education systems, in Western countries have been wasting resources on armaments. Today, Russia must be held accountable for the Ukraine crisis.
Anti-war rallies have been held across Italy over the past days. Most of the demonstrations held in Rome, Palermo, Milan and other Italian cities have been in solidarity with Ukraine.
People at the rally have mixed feelings over who should be held accountable for the war in Ukraine. The majority believe there is a shared responsibility upon all the parts involved, from the US and the NATO, to Russia's president Vladimir Putin.
It goes without saying that history must not be forgotten. NATO's expansion towards Eastern Europe is central to this crisis. The parties involved must continue to explore all diplomatic tools in order to have Putin's troops withdrawn. However, let's not forget why the conflict began in the first place.
In Italy, the most recent government update places the number of Ukrainian refugees who have entered the country since the start of the war at about 9,000. According to Ukrainian-Italian associations, up to 800,000-900,000 refugees may reach Italy in the coming weeks. Max Civili, Rome.
France now has a set list of candidates for a presidential election next month, and many voters hoping serious domestic issues will finally begin to be discussed. Now, Islamophobia and war hysteria have dominated the discussion so far, instead of record levels of inflation, apathy, and political repression. Rami Mazzara reports from Paris.
Waiting until the final moment to register in order to skirt laws on equal media time for election candidates, French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed he will run for re-election. The slate of candidates is now finalized. Macron began his term hailed as the new leader of the free world, but his once-in-a-century repression of the Yellow Vests has many calling him a liberal strongman who enforces rubber bullet liberalism. Macron is leading in the first round and has a comfortable lead in the second round of roughly 60-40 over far-right mainstay Marine Le Pen. The Russian special military operation in Ukraine has given Macron a 5-point increase in the past 2 weeks, and the ending of extremely strict coronavirus rules in mid-March may lead to another increase. However, Western polling agencies have become severely discredited in recent years, with France's largest newspaper refusing to run any of them. The campaign hasn't been centered around the incumbent's record, but openly Islamophobic ideas. Despite running third or fourth in the polls, far-right convicted racist Eric Zemmour has been allowed by media executives to set the agenda.
The rise of the extreme right is totally unsupportable. And we have no choice but to confront these ideas of fascism, racism, and xenophobia. France must stand up as one and say no. I'm sure that France will, and I'm sure no far-right candidate will reach the second round.
The resulting lack of serious issues appears certain to produce record abstention. Just 52% of France is interested in the vote this year, compared to 78% for the previous election.
3 weeks ago, all of the leading candidates were openly pro-Russian, but France's media has been swept by a wave of war hysteria, which usually benefits the incumbent. However, for many, at least that has pushed Islamophobia off the agenda, at least for now. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency have issued a joint statement following a trip to the agency's by the agency's director general to Tehran, in line with a resolve to expand cooperation. The two sides have agreed on the following.
The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran will provide to the IAEA no later than the 20th of March 2022 written explanations, including related supporting documents, to the questions raised by the IAEA, which have not been addressed by Iran on the issues related to three locations. Within 2 weeks after receiving the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran's written explanations and related supporting documents, the IAEA will review this information and will submit to the AEOI any questions on received information. Within 1 week after the IAEA has submitted to the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran any questions on such information, the IAEA and the AEOI will meet in Tehran to address the questions. Separate meetings will be held for each location. Upon completion of the activities set out in the paragraphs 1 to 3 above and following the correspondent evaluation by the agency, the Director General will aim to report his conclusion by the June 2022 Board of Governors.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency held a press conference shortly after arriving in Vienna from the Iranian capital. Rafael Mariana Grossi said that there is no predetermined outcome in the agency's investigation of open issues in Iran.
Deadline. There is no predefined outcome. There is not predefined name for what I am going to do, which is the right way to proceed. We have to be left alone in our professional work, and we will determine with the experts at the Safeguards Department. We are going to be evaluating what we have and what it is feasible in that regard. So no politics here.
Grossi expressed hope that the IAEA will resolve the remaining issues with regard to Iran by June. However, he noted that more time might be needed. Grossi said that he expects Iran's foreign minister to return to Vienna for the conclusion of the talks on reviving the 2015 deal, the JCPOA. He said the IAEA's process of resolving the remaining issues with Iran is not likely to be mentioned in a possible agreement between Iran and the P4+1. While in Tehran, Grossi held what he described as fruitful talks with the head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization. There has been another stabbing attack in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Quds, with the incident coming to an end with Israeli forces killing a teenage Palestinian. Hamas has reacted by heaping praise on what it called the heroic stabbing operation and said it's a natural response to the crimes of Israeli occupiers. Now we've talked to our West Bank correspondent for an update.
Another Palestinian teen was shot dead by the Israeli forces in Al-Quds, in the occupied city of Al-Quds. What happened, according to the Israeli military, that almost a 19-year-old Palestinian, originally from the city of Al-Quds, just before Al-Fajr prayers, arrived at Bab Hutta, north Al-Aqsa Mosque, and tried to stab Israeli soldiers there. Immediately, Israeli officers opened fire, wounding him, and they left him bleeding until he passed away. First, the Israeli military statement claimed that two Israeli officers were wounded during this operation as the Palestinian youth stabbed them. However, later, they said that one Israeli officer was wounded by the stabber and the other was wounded from the shooting by the Israeli officers. However, Palestinian witnesses there said they were heading to the Al-Aqsa Mosque for the Fajr prayers, and they heard Israeli soldiers screaming at the Bab Hutta. They rushed there. They found a Palestinian youth bleeding and the Israeli forces not allowing anyone to rescue his life.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
Amerik Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 6th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters and messages. So Please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any message for our great listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And happy the auspicious birth anniversary of the third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Yes, congratulations on this auspicious occasion to all freedom-seeking people around the world. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and today is a very great Sunday. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us in IRAB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports are important to us because they enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Heikki Pranin from Finland, Ratan Kumar Pal from India, and Rifat Jamil from Bangladesh. So, Heikki, Ratan, and Rifat, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And here, a million thanks to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us letters, emails, and postcards from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. Oh, we've received 3 postcards from around the world. One of these postcards is from Maurice Weinberg from Latvia. I think he has sent it to us on the occasion of the Christian New Year and the Christmas, which is past a few days. We've received a letter. This is a handwritten letter from Richard King from the UK. Of course, Richard King from the UK has also sent us a postcard. This postcard has the picture of London. And from India, we've received an email from Bidan Kundra Sanyal. From Germany, we've received an email from Joachim Thiel. And last but not the least is an email from Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Stay with us, please. I will be back with these kind and great emails from around the world. Welcome back. As I said, we've received many great postcards from around the world, and Maurice Weinberg from Latvia has sent us two postcards, and they're so beautiful. One of them is actually a greeting card, because you can see these postcards. These two cards have the images of Christmas decorations, and thank you very much, Maurice Weinberg from Latvia, for sending us these beautiful cards. Of course, in Iran, we Iranians don't celebrate the New Year on Christmas, and on Christian New Year, we in Iran celebrate the New Iranian Year on Nowruz, which starts on the beginning of spring. As I said, from the UK, Richard King has sent us a letter. This is a handwritten letter, and this is attached with a greeting card, a postcard, which has the picture of London. Thank you very much, Richard. And let's see Richard King from the UK. What Richard says, he says, "Dear Sarah, Madam, the last 18 months have proved to be a very challenging and strange time for all of us as the COVID pandemic sweeps the world. Here in the UK, we have had to change our normal way of life, some people shielding, others working from home, and for the vast majority, keeping a low profile and social contact to a minimum. As a keen radio listener for over 40 years, my enforced stay at home was made much easier by being able to listen to international shortwave broadcasts. The fact that stations such as yours stayed on the air and broadcast news from other parts of the world helped me understand the global situation. It was a relief to know that it was not only in the UK that we were suffering from the pandemic, and that other countries were facing their own difficulties. Your programs have always been entertaining, and it was a pleasure to hear about the news, arts, historical articles, and other cultural events in Iran. Much has been made over recent years about the possible decline in shortwave broadcasting. I'm glad to say that your programs made a difference in a difficult time. It is important that you keep broadcasting, as you still have an active and appreciative audience. Congratulations and keep up the good work. I have detailed below a reception report of some of the programs that I had. I would very much like to receive your QSL card or a letter of confirmation of the broadcast. This will then go into my collection. I wish all the staff at the station good luck and good health in the future. Best regards, Richard King." Richard King from the UK. Salam, and warmest greetings to you from Iran, Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Many thanks for sending us such a detailed letter, and of course, your beautiful postcard. Thank you very much for sending us this letter, Richard King from the UK. Of course, it was a very challenging and a strange time for many of the world people and world countries. Fortunately, in Iran, the majority of people have been inoculated, and the rate of COVID-19 has decreased dramatically. And we hope that people around the world, especially our listeners, be immune and safe from this brutal virus and lethal virus. And I, on behalf of my staff at IRB English Radio, wish you all the best. We wish you good health for you and all our listeners around the world. Richard King, we are very glad that you enjoy our programs because you describe them as entertaining. So you listen to different parts of IRIB English Radio programs. As you said, you listen to the news, arts, historical articles, and cultural events, and that's great. Thank you very much for reflecting your views. Richard King, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Please stay with us. This is Listeners Special, and let's see what Bidhan Chandra Sanyal from India says. I am pleased to hear that due to Tehran's role, the dialogue between Tehran and the four Western countries in Vienna, the Austrian capital, on renewing the nuclear deal and lifting the illegal U.S. sanctions has reached a critical stage. I hope that an important agreement will be signed at the end of this dialogue. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bidhan Chandra Sanyal from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email. That's great that you're following the world developments, especially Iran's peaceful nuclear program and Iran's nuclear deal with four Western countries in Vienna. That's great that you're following these developments. Of course, a good agreement is a win-win agreement when U.S. illegal and unilateral sanctions are removed. Yes, that's a good agreement. Thank you very much, Bidhan Chandra Sanyal from India, for sending us this email and your consideration to the world developments, especially Iran developments. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. From Germany, we've received an email from Joachim Thiel. I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, Joachim. Let's see what he says. Hello from Germany. I found your station while tuning over the bands and want to write a short report about reception conditions over here in western part of Germany, hoping this will be useful finding out your coverage. Please acknowledge this report with so-called QSL and add a current transmission schedule if possible. Thanks a lot for your reply. Salam and warm greetings to you, Joachim Thiel from Germany. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email. We're so happy that you could catch the signals of IRIB English Radio. This is great, Joachim Thiel from Germany. Let this mutual relationship continue. So write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. And as for your request for the transmission schedule, you can find our schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Because sending any schedule on behalf of IRIB English Radio is not possible because of coronavirus pandemic. Of course, this is temporary. We will soon send our great listeners around the world the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. And after a short break, I will be back with the last email from the Netherlands. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Dear Voice of Iran Radio, I think he means dear the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting or IRIB English Radio. Glad to confirm your broadcast today. Please verify my audio recording, and if correct, please verify by your EQSL. Thank you very much. Salam and greetings to you, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Yes, we will send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, Again, I congratulate all freedom-seeking people around the world on the auspicious birth anniversary of the third infallible era of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Congratulations to all. Many thanks for being with this program, listeners, especially the Sunday program, your program. Have a good time. Please keep in touch with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kavita Ahlai. The JCPOA revival talks continue in Vienna. Even though many were of the understanding that the talks should have borne fruit by the end of February, that has not happened. Two major developments, though, have occurred. First, Iran and the IAEA have agreed to a roadmap to resolve all outstanding issues. But there seems to be a monkey wrench thrown into the revival talks. Russia wants written guarantees from the United States that sanctions on Russia will not damage its cooperation with Iran. Just a couple angles we will be covering in this edition of The Spotlight. But first, to get the latest on what is going on, Homa Leslie is a correspondent joining us from Vienna. Well, Homa, tell us about the IAEA chief's visit to Tehran, what was achieved there, and of course, any new developments that there has been one major one, which I'm going to ask you about.
Yeah, so we know that the negotiations here, the Vienna talks aimed at restoring the JCPOA, are still ongoing. As you said there, there was this expectation that soon we're going to have the foreign ministers come and make an announcement. A part of this, an important part, basically, of the disagreements or sticking points concerned the issue of Iran's safeguards cases under IAEA investigation. Now, with the trip made by Rafael Grossi, that has been basically seen as a positive move. It's been seen with optimism by the negotiators here because the sides have agreed on a roadmap to get these issues resolved. And Mr. Eslami, I think, did make it quite clear in the press conference in Tehran that that is a red line for Iran. It wants these cases permanently closed. And now there's a specific roadmap and timeline to get there. But now, you just mentioned there, this new issue Mr. Lavrov making those comments has thrown a huge question mark over the whole process of the negotiations. But let's just make some aspects of it clear. Mr. Lavrov, in his comments, and I'm quoting here from the report, says, "We want to be able to have a free and full trade, economic and investment cooperation and military technical cooperation with Iran. We don't want these sanctions to affect that," which is making it quite broad. But at the same time, the Russian ambassador here, Mikhail Olyanov, who's engaged in the talk, the Russian negotiator, tweeted that he tweeted this after Mr. Lavrov's message. He said that he's met with EU coordinator Enrique Mora, and they have, and I'm quoting him here, they have raised a number of questions that need to be addressed now in order to ensure the smooth civil nuclear cooperation with Iran. So he's just put it in the framework of nuclear cooperation. We know, of course, that that nuclear cooperation under the JCPOA includes, for instance, the returning the Fordo plant into a research center with the help of Russia, the supply of fuel to the Tehran Research Reactor, the exchange of enriched uranium for yellowcake, etc. That's what we're talking about. And also, I'll just quickly mention here, Carver, if I can, one Western diplomat has already been quoted saying that if Russian demands for these guarantees just and purely pertain to the nuclear cooperation with Iran, as Mr. Olyanov is saying, then that, quote, can be managed. But this diplomat says if Lavrov is using this as a play to try and carve a huge hole out of the overall Ukraine sanctions, then that's a different story.
Okay, any reactions from Iran on this?
At the moment, we had one news story saying that an Iranian member of the team has said that this Lavrov position is not constructive, but this was strongly rejected by the Iranian team, and sources close to the team and members of the team said that this is a fabricated quote, and up until this stage, they have not made any comments about this issue. But I just like to quickly point out that as far as we know, they have said that these negotiations are continuing. And yes, I'm just trying to find the quote. What this source said was at the same time that Iran believes neither war nor sanctions are the solution to any crisis. At the same time, the expectation is that the talks and cooperation, as per the JCPOA, will not be influenced by international developments and sanctions regimes.
Thank you so much for that. I'm glad I asked you that then, because you clarified this point for us, especially on the Iranian side, that was rejected. Homolesky there from Vienna, many thanks. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Joining us, veteran journalist and writer Elijah Magnier, who joins us from Brussels. And also joining us is journalist and political analyst Hafsa Kara Mustafa, who joins us from London.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both. Hafsa Kara Mustafa, let me first start with you. So February's come and gone, and no JCPOA revival has occurred, unlike what people thought. Now, we had the visit by the IAEA chief today to the Iranian capital, Tehran, but what we're looking at is a landscape which there are just too many ambiguities and doubts from the people who are from the outside looking in. And I'm asking you what your thoughts are so far in terms of where this stands. What are your thoughts?
Well, obviously, this has been a very, very long week. And what could have been a sort of a different scenario just a couple of weeks ago is now made very different because of the war between Ukraine and Russia, and obviously the heavy sanctions regime imposed now on Russia. I think this is a very good development because it obviously gives Iran the upper hand. Remember, this is a time where energy prices are soaring, and many European countries, namely Germany, which is the biggest economy in the EU, is highly reliant on Russian gas and can no longer access it because of the sanction regime. So now the Iranian gas and the Iranian market, in essence, is extraordinarily appealing to the EU, who must have regretted following so blindly the Americans in sanctioning Iran, and are obviously trying to get closer. So I think this is an incredibly positive development for Iran, because not only does it open up a new market, not only can this now put these heinous sanctions behind, obviously not all, because concessions will have to be made, but I think progress will have to be made, and obviously Iran now is in a far better position. So I think all in all, this is a very good week.
Okay, well, let's see what Elijah Magner thinks. Elijah Magner, we're looking at obviously the impact that I'm not going to get too much into the IAEA Iran deal, though maybe I may later, but the military execution of Russia on Ukraine has had impacts, and in this case, as our guests there said, perhaps it's going to have a positive return for Iran were this JCPOA revival to happen. Do you view it that way?
Yes and no, because President Putin said today that if we don't sell our oil, nobody's going to sell it. So it means that this is very clear that nobody is going to benefit from oil if Russia is under sanction in not selling oil and gas to those who are buying it already. However, on the other hand, if the deal is concluded, it has a positive influence on the market, because so far nobody said that Putin cannot sell its oil. And since the United States is the first, depending on the month, or the second largest importer of oil from Russia and Europe, the first in gas, so this is going to continue flowing. If Iran entered the market, and it depends when. Today, the Iranians are talking about making a deal with the International Atomic Energy Organization by June. So we're talking about several months ahead of us. The oil today has reached $118.5 a barrel. We don't know where this is going, how long the war in Ukraine is going to last, and if the sanctions are going to be lifted immediately, and the Iranian oil is going to be part of the market from day one. All these questions are still pending on this signing the deal, approving all the guarantee that Iran is asking, clearing the problem with the atomic energy that was raised by several intelligence agencies, saying that Iran has other four reactors or nuclear sites that are undeclared. All that is still pending and has not been resolved yet. So I think it is still early to say this is going to have a positive or a negative or no impact on the international market.
I need to make sure that I understood you correctly, because I did a fact check here. I'm not coming up with the statement that you said there about Putin stating that if we can't sell our oil, nobody can. That is how I understood you saying that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So let's take a look at what Hafsa Kara Mustafa, what Russia has said. First, the foreign minister, and some say it's a coincidence, but not, about the timing of when this came out, which says Russia wants written guarantees from U.S. that sanctions on Russia will not damage our cooperation with Iran. The piece of news said Iranian official says Russia's demand is aimed at securing its other interests. Iran, however, based on our correspondence, said those are fabricated. Iran has made no official reply yet. But the piece of news is true about Russia's, from the foreign minister, wants written guarantees. What do you think about that? What's your reaction to it?
Well, I think this is a moment where, because of the fragility on the markets, that everyone who has an upper hand in this specific sector will try and exploit it to the best of their ability. I think, in a way, Lavrov has indicated that he wants to continue relations and trade with Iran, which is obviously very good. It is also a way of giving the opposing side the opportunity to say, well, you know what, this is between you and Iran, that's none of our business. And I think if that's sort of an opportunity given to the other side, it's very positive, because it obviously means that the sanctions will start to be limited exclusively to what the EU, to what European Western nations have been demanding from Iran, namely on the nuclear program, but will reduce the impact of the sanctions with other markets. So I think all in all, it's a very understandable statement to be made by Lavrov, considering the situation and considering the situation on the gas markets today as things stand. And I don't think it's going to be a hurdle to the negotiations with Iran, precisely because at the moment I do think that the oil-producing countries do actually have the upper hand, considering the war is happening. And even if the war comes to an end within the next few days, I think the nature of the sanctions regime imposed by Western nations will not come to an end immediately. I think there's going to be a gradual step, because, of course, major measures have been taken against the Russian economy. And I don't think that any negotiation now in regards to the war will have to be made incrementally. And therefore, in the next few weeks, any decisions that can be made by Iran will benefit Iran greatly, given the fragility of the market at the moment.
Okay. You seem to be optimistic on that. Elijah Magnier, to further expand on what the Russian foreign minister has said, he said the limitations had become a stumbling block, talking about the sanctions, I guess, for the Iran nuclear deal, warning the West that Russian national interests would have to be taken into account, and that the sanctions on Russia had created a problem from Moscow's perspective. How much of a problem has it become for Moscow vis-a-vis the JCPOA revival talks?
Well, there is a very important issue Moscow is raising here. Iran said it has 33 kilos of 60% enriched uranium and 125, 27 kilos of 20%. And all that is Russia is supposed to buy it and sell it in the market. So Russia is asking for a written approval from the U.S. that this is not going to be included in the sanction, and that it will be allowed to sell on the market the additional uranium and other products that maybe Russia would like to include. So what Russia is doing, that in the midst of the highest sanction on Russia, is really twisting the Americans' hands and saying, you can't do it without us. Even when you go to talk to the Iranians, you ask us to mediate. Like today, they are asking China, that is considered a strong opponent of the U.S., to mediate with Russia. So the Russians are saying to the Americans, you don't have to continue with your double standard. And if you want our support, so let us talk about all the sanctions that you are imposing on us. And this creates a problem, because it is linked to the Iranian nuclear deal, and it's just a second front that is open on the JCPOA in front of the Americans, that the Americans also seems not in very much in a hurry when they say, okay, we need to confirm that these four sites are clear and they do not match the intelligence information we have, and all that is buying time to see how long Russia is going to stay in Ukraine and for how long this fight is going to last. Is it a few days, a few weeks, or several months? We don't know yet.
Well, talk about the time and it being speeded up or not, and the reactions by Iran and the other parties. Hafsakar Mustafa, I'm coming in at a different angle on the question I'm asking. And first, the German chancellor last week, while in Israel, said that this deal has to happen. It has to happen soon. It has to happen fast. Then we had today what Iranian nuclear chief Dr. Islami said, that no political influence and lobbying should impact the decisions of the IAEA. And then we had the Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett visiting Moscow, which I think that visit has already taken place or is still taking place. So I'm asking about Israel. What do you think? How much of a factor does Israel play? Oh, one other thing, Hafsakar Mustafa, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where you had a mini Israeli delegation actually visit Vienna. We're not too sure who sent invitations out to them to see what's going on there. And it was interesting to find that out when you have a regime that possesses nuclear warheads, but yet wants to find out that that Iran is getting limited or whatever they think Iran should be getting in this JCPOA revival. What do you think about the Israeli factor here?
Well, can I just say that this week, which has been incredibly rich in events, has also exposed a lot of hypocrisies. The nations that have actually invaded and violated the sovereignty of numerous nations, including Iraq, including Libya, are now lecturing Russia and Putin on its violation of Ukraine's sovereignty. So I think nothing in terms of hypocrisy is surprising. And of course, Israel's decision to actually attempt to stop any development in the nuclear sector by Iran, given that it itself possesses 200 nuclear warheads, and was admitted also by Ehud Olmert in 2002, because many people still insist that, that's a sort of an open secret, but it's not. Actually, it isn't. The Prime Minister of Israel admitted that it had nuclear warheads. So whatever the Israeli position is, I think it needs to be set aside. And I think at the moment, given that it's in a very difficult position, because of course they have affinities with the Ukrainian president, who is a Jewish pro-Israel leader, and they also are in a difficult position in terms of their relationship with Russia, which is very, very close given the huge Russian community in Israel. Their position now is far weaker, and therefore I think we can set them aside and not really give them much importance, other than perhaps the influence they can have on the US Congress. But coming back to the negotiation in terms of what's going on today, I think, again, this is a very rich and eventful week. And I think whatever decisions, major decisions can be made, and major achievements on the Iranian side will have to be made within the next few days. Because, of course, everything is in a flux at the moment, precisely because we don't know where the war is heading. And therefore, this is the opportunity, this is the window that will allow this sanctions regime to be reduced.
Well, you know, when you think about this in hindsight, what Iran has asked for, Elijah Magnier, is that it wants guarantees on a whole host of issues, but one of the biggest ones is the fact that it doesn't want or wanted guarantees for the U.S. not to pull out of this, something the U.S. says, I can't guarantee you that. And this conflict that has happened, the Ukrainian conflict, shows that here we have, and I'm not saying that Russia is throwing a monkey wrench here, but in a sense it is, how external factors are going to affect this JCPOA revival talks. How can there be guarantees, something that Iran has asked for? And you can use the Ukrainian conflict as one example. Is that even possible?
Well, this is a very good example in this period, a very critical period in the world where there is a war between Russia and Ukraine. And the origin of this war is in 1990, U.S. Secretary James Baker promised Mikhail Gorbachev at that time that NATO will not expand one inch. In 1993, Warren Christopher also promised Boris Yeltsin exactly the same thing. 1997, we have documents exchanged, all that revealed by the American National Security. And we understand, written or non-written agreement or verbal agreement, the United States is not respecting its deal. There are many, many agreements in the world that throughout the history that the Americans did not respect. So when the Iranians are saying, I need a guarantee, it's really not standing on robust ground, because the United States can offer written guarantee, but that has very little value. Because with a new president like Donald Trump, what he did in 2018, in 2025, the same thing can be repeated with another president. So there are no guarantees. And this is what Iran is asking today. And it has to keep some buffer, like the enrichment uranium or whatever buffer Iran is asking. Now, I'm not going to discuss it. As a guarantee under the control of the International Atomic Energy in Iran that will be used against the United States and regain the production of enrichment uranium above 3.67, in case the United States doesn't respect this deal.
Okay. Well, talk about guarantees. We're looking at, I think, a contagion here, Hafsakar Mustafa, because lo and behold, we have another party to the deal. If this news is accurate, and it came from a, well, if you want to call it a reputable organization,